Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome back to Everyone Talks to Liz. Should I call it Lizzie? Welcome back to Everyone Talks to Lizzie. No, we'll stick with Liz. Okay, so this week I thought I was going to jump into something that I really don't talk too much about. Dating and love. You know, the concept of dating has so totally evolved dramatically throughout time. I mean, if you think about Romeo and Juliet or The Notebook, Pride and Prejudice, or DMing these days to find someone to share dinners and maybe eventually diamond rings with. But the perils of online dating, which has just exploded in popularity, are really out there. In fact, while more than 40% of Americans use online dating and 20% of current relationships began online, according to eHarmony, more than 52% of people lie in their online dating profile. And you know, in this age of COVID and its new variants, do you really want to take the chance somebody's lying about, say, for example, their vax status? Okay, enter Coffee Meets Bagel. It's the first dating app that had users enter their vaccination status. Coffee Meets Bagel started as sort of the anti-Tinder. It's not for one-night hookups. It's for those looking for a longer-term relationship. As wildly popular as the app has become, you have to know the incredible story behind the app, particularly the founder. Dawoon Kang moved to America from Korea at age 12. And after sort of a dating app stroke of genius, Dawoon decided, you know what, I'm going to quit my job. It was a good job. Hello, high finance, and launch Coffee Meets Bagel with her sister. A few years and a few million dates later, Dawoon joins us now on Everyone Talks to Liz. I love this story, Dawoon, because you and your sisters just really kind of went all in to reach for something about which you weren't exactly knowledgeable. And I'm talking about designing an app, putting together a dating site. I mean, talk about where you came up with the idea of Coffee Meets Bagel.
Hi, Liz. Thank you for having me on the show. Yes. So just to give context to the listeners, when we started, when my sisters and I started Coffee Meets Bagel, I was actually working out of Hong Kong at JP Morgan's special opportunities investing position. And so it was completely different from tech world. And my sisters, we two of us had business background and one of us was a designer. And so none of us were actually had a tech background. We were not coders. And so when we first started this journey of Coffee Meets Bagel, we had to outsource our technology. And I remember we, you know, rummaging through a outsourcing site. It was called Odesk then, and finding somebody in Indonesia, a developer in Indonesia, and having them develop a prototype of what became Coffee Meets Bagel eventually. And, you know, funny story, like this first developer actually disappeared for a while. And so, of course, we had a lot of scare. So it was a long, long journey, to say the least, for us to start Coffee Meets Bagel. Anyway, going back to what was your original question?
My original question was coming up with this concept of Coffee Meets Bagel and quitting your job, and specifically the focus of Coffee Meets Bagel, which is not necessarily a quickie hookup site, but more of a longer term, looking for longer term love site.
Yeah. So the three of us got together and, you know, back in early, it was 2012, and we had this dream of starting a company together for a long time, my sisters and I, because our dad is an entrepreneur and our mom was an entrepreneur as well. So growing up, we always talked about starting something together and we just didn't know what or when. And back in 2012, one of us, one of my sisters graduated from business school and, you know, we said we were in our late 20s. And, you know, it felt like among the three of us, we had, you know, at that point, almost like 30 years of work experience. And, you know, starting a company is a risky business, right? So the longer you wait and, you know, when you start a family and just you have more responsibilities, we thought it probably will get harder for us to be able to take that kind of big risk. So it just kind of felt like now or never. And so we decided, hey, let's start something that we always talked about it. We looked around for a business idea. We knew that we wanted to do something in the consumer space because we wanted to make a direct impact to millions of people around the world. And we knew that we wanted to make sure that it was an area that we felt passionate about and it felt really fun. And dating, given that we were in our late 20s, just kept coming up as a problem for us as well as our friends. And so we started looking into dating space and what kind of players are out there and realized, wow, there's a huge opportunity here. It's a really big market. It's a growing market. And there seems to be no dating app that really focuses on long-term relationship. It really, everything that we encounter really felt like, hey, let's just put in front of people as many people as possible and then get them to choose as many people as possible, because that would increase the probability of them being able to go on a date. And we thought, hey, you know what, even though this gluttony of, you know, people and matching left and right might feel like a really fast way to meet somebody meaningful, what we think slow dating or slower dating approach, where you're actually more focused on one or fewer people at a time. We started with one person at a time. That we think is actually a faster way to meet somebody, more long-term oriented, because you actually get give them a real chance and they get to give you a real chance to get to know each other. And so we focused on long-term because that's what we felt passionate about. And, you know, that's right. Where we saw the white space.
Let me back up a bit, because this is when you're in your 20s, but you actually moved to the States when you were around age 12 from Korea. Why did you guys leave Korea? And what was that like, assimilating into a brand new culture and a brand new country like America?
Yeah. Well, so my dad, who has been a huge influence in all of our lives, it was actually his dream to be able to come and study in the States and be able to speak English and be able to, run businesses with global platform. He never got a chance to do that because my grandfather never agreed to it. And so when he had his children, I think it was he really wanted to make sure that we get an opportunity to go abroad, be able to speak English and be able to just be a global citizen. And so he asked us when we were 12, hey, what do you guys think about going to the States and studying there instead of being in Korea? And then we were super excited because, you know, we only hear about the United States out of a movie. And so we were like, oh my God, no brainer. We want to go. But then we came. And of course, when we came, the excitement of being in a new place quickly kind of turned into more of a fear because we didn't speak the language. And I remember I was the super outspoken person when I was a child growing up in Korea, you know, always the first to raise my hand in class. But just entering the school, looking at everyone and not being able to speak the language, just I almost kind of felt like I lost part of myself. And for a very, very long time, I remained very, very quiet. And it took me a while to kind of just find my voice again.
About how long did it take before you actually felt comfortable walking out the door and facing the world?
Very long time. Actually, it didn't start until it's funny. A lot of people have told me, oh, you know, you're so great at public speaking. You're so great at sharing your story. But, you know, I think inside there was always part of me that was self-conscious about, okay, oh my God, I want to make sure that I speak with a perfect grammar. I want to make sure that I, you know, there's certain words that I can't pronounce that I, you know, I really don't want anyone to know. And, it honestly didn't, happen until my early 30s, which was, that's like 18 years later that I kind of was like, you know what? I don't think this really matters anymore. I'm just going to focus on my message and what I want to convey to the audience. And when I feel passionate about something and when I, that really translates and it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, if I'm, you know, mixing up a or the or singular or plural, which
absolutely.
I often did,
absolutely,
because the main point is not that. It really is about what I'm trying to leave the audience with.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And by the way, you speak phenomenal English. and I love when some Americans,
well, you know, when you stop worrying about those kind of things, is when you actually start
learning.
Speaking better, right?
Well, as long as you try. And it really annoys me when some Americans, you know, probably good naturedly, but make fun of somebody's mistakes or their accent. I always reverse it and I say, that's great. Can you speak Korean as well as she speaks English? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's like, God, just speak a few words. And it's so impressive to me. And that's what I think is sort of the great American immigrant story of people like you coming and starting businesses and employing more people. We're not done yet. We'll be back in a moment. I know a lot of you have had this experience because for those of us who in 2020 were all sent home and we were stuck in a lockdown during the pandemic, we had a lot of time on our hands and I saw an ad for Masterclass and I thought, I want to better myself. I want access to all of these brilliant people who teach you things. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. Masterclass is the only streaming platform where you can learn and grow with more than 200 plus of the world's best and smartest. For just under 10 bucks a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to every instructor. And I don't care, you can wake up one morning and say, I want to learn about business. And then another where you say, I want to learn how to survive in the wild if I have no water and no fire to make me warm. You can access Masterclass on your phone, on your computer, smart TV, or even in audio mode. And the classes totally make a difference. Don't wait another moment to start your learning journey with Masterclass. Right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/Liz. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/Liz. Masterclass.com/Liz. Let's get to your first attempt at the app with your sisters. You know, this podcast is about not necessarily the great successes, but the failures that bring you to success. How difficult did it get before you really started to make it?
It was a really slow start, Liz. You know, I remember when we first started, you know, I was alluding to earlier, like our developer disappeared. And so that was a big blow. We had already sunk in, you know, a good amount of our personal money into developing the prototype. So that was a big blow. We were, you know, I remember we were trying to start fundraising and our investors wouldn't really told us straight up, hey, without a CTO, you're not going to be able to raise. I'm not going to invest and you're not going to be able to raise from anyone. And so we really had to recruit a proper CTO to be even able to raise money. Mm. And so that took a really long time. You know, when we started operating and we, you know, opened our beta business, it took a while for us to actually slowly start getting our name out there. And we had to try many, many different things, you know, working. I remember going out to, we were in New York, then we going out to Columbia University campus, you know, handing out flyers, going from cafe to cafe, looking for a partnership for any cafes to be, you know, who's willing to work with us. And, you know, those are some of the very many, many, you know, there was no single silver bullet. We had to throw 100 different bullets to kind of incrementally grow until to the point where we had a good amount of people. And because the service was good and different, they started talking about it, and the word of mouth kind of flywheel started going. I feel like it took us at least like one or 2 years. Sure. until that to happen.
But you have to understand, like, from somebody like me and my perspective and watching this, is you guys are running around handing out pamphlets on campuses and in cafes. That's called bootstrapping it. People think, oh, she's just really smart. She worked at J.P. Morgan. She worked this thing up. You guys, it is so much harder than it looks. But the climb is half the fun, is it not? And so tell me, what was the point where you realized, wait a minute, this is starting to work? Was there a moment where you just had that aha, okay, now we got some numbers here and we're getting known?
Yeah. Before I say that, I love what you mentioned, which is the hustle, like the bootstrapping. I think for founders, and for a really long time, a lot longer than probably a lot of people think, you really have to be willing to be roll up the sleeve and do what it takes to get things going. A lot of people don't know this, but the three of us actually, in order for us to make sure the platform is really safe and we were getting quality people, we were literally, anyone who signs up, we're literally going through and manually approving people for a really long time. And, you know, we would do that at night after we were done with our work. The three of us were living together and we were just going through one by one, making sure that the photos were, you know, there was no scandalous photos. Like the profiles looked, you know, it was not an obviously fake profile. Like we did that for a really long time. So the things that you think is not like a CEO job, I think founders really, as a person who's starting off, like there is no job that is below you. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the going back to your question, when we thought it was, oh, hey, there's something here, that conviction came pretty early for us when we did our beta, because I think it may take a while for you to get a large number of consumers to get things going, especially for what I call two-sided platform, like dating app, where there needs to be people who are willing to match you and people who you like, and there needs to be a sizable number of that in order for a service to properly start running. So that could take a while, but the reason why we had a conviction really early is because we tested our beta product among about 50 of our friends, and we were manually doing everything. It was our friends and we were doing the manual matching. We were sending our Coffee Meets Bagel model is every day at noon, we give a curated match of really quality people. Okay. And we started with one match a day, and we didn't have any algorithm or anything. So we were, you know, sending emails ourselves, generating matches ourselves. And the reaction that we got from our friends were phenomenal. They were like, wow, I never actually come across a service like this. It's so great that it's friends of friends and people that I can trust. And there isn't, you know, in existing platforms, in existing dating apps, like it's really hard to trust.
Yes.
I don't have a platform
yes.
that I can really trust. So when we heard those subjective, qualitative, and not that many, it's not like we spoke to thousands of people, that's when we realized that there was something here that we should investigate and we should be willing to take a risk for. And so that qualitative feedback in the very beginning was what gave us conviction.
Sure.
to continue to invest and keep going.
Well, it was certainly encouraging. I can only imagine. How did COVID change your model? And talk about what you did to deal with the lockdowns, because at that point you think to yourself, well, nobody's going to want a date. But you guys immediately dove in and did something very different.
Yeah, I mean, talk about challenges and how to overcome it. Oh, my God. COVID, I mean, for a lot of companies, not just Coffee Meets Bagel, it was a very difficult and challenging and uncertain time. Mm-hmm. And Coffee Meets Bagel is actually one of the very few, the only sizable dating app that is still remaining independent. Most dating app of certain size, it now belongs to Match Group, mm-hmm. Or the Magic Group, which is what Bumble is part of. And so as an independent dating app, we really needed to hunker down in order for us to make sure that we can ride this wave, that we weren't really sure how long it was going to last. And we immediately saw a dip in a user sign up and also our revenue because people also didn't know what to expect. And it was uncertain economically and also health-wise. What we started doing immediately was talk to our users, talk to the daters. Hey, what are you experiencing? How are you thinking about dating? How is it changing right now? And what one thing that came out loud and clear is that daters, especially those of us who are living by ourselves, completely cut off from our family and friends, were feeling really lonely, and they were so craving for a connection. And it didn't really even matter if it was like the one, the romantic partner. They just wanted to feel like they're not alone and not, you know, they're not going this really scary experience alone. And so we immediately launched this thing called Coffee Talk, and it wasn't really based on dating. It was a virtual space. We just used Zoom because we wanted to launch it as quickly as possible. It was a virtual space of about 50 to 100 Coffee Meets Bagel daters coming mm-hmm. together to just chat and catch up and share about their experience. And we would have a moderator that we trained to make sure that it doesn't feel awkward and it's not chaotic. And we would break them and break people into small groups so they get a chance to really have some meaningful connections. And of course, being that we were dating app, we did give people a chance to exchange phone numbers or any kind of contact information if they wanted to at the very end. And mm-hmm. a lot of people did. And we actually found out that people were meeting outside of Coffee Talk as well because they wanted to keep in touch. And the reaction was phenomenal because people just wanted to connect. And so we continued this on until very late into the summer. That's when things start easing out a little bit and we started getting more information about COVID. So it was a little bit less scary. So that was one like big pivot item that we did. And we had to, because Coffee Meets Bagel was all about meeting up. Hey, let's, you know, get off the app and meet up for meaningful connection, and people were not meeting up. So that's one of the items that we quickly launched based on talking to the users. And I think it always just comes down to staying close contact with your consumer and listening to them. Sure. And really looking for listening for their needs.
Tell me about the numbers. I want to know how many dates the site has engendered, and just as importantly, any marriages sprouting from Coffee Meets Bagel?
Yes. We used to count how many marriages we were generating, but one, it's actually hard to track that because unless they literally tell us, email us afterwards that they're engaged or married, we don't know. So there are many, many engagement and marriages that mm-hmm. we're not able to capture. And then we sort of kind of lost track. So there are a lot out there, but we don't know the exact numbers. In terms of matches, we actually recently celebrated more than 10 billion matches that we generated globally.
What?
So that was a huge, huge accomplishment that we celebrated.
Wow, that is so amazing. That's incredible. You're doing some really important work in many ways. There's so much loneliness out there in the world. And COVID, of course, did not help. In the end, though, you know, I guess from the standpoint of people looking at you and saying you took this chance, you left a very hot job at JP Morgan, Hong Kong, that must have been scary. Do you ever regret that?
No. And it's funny that you mentioned the word regret, because there are two main things that really made it easy, relatively easy for me to make the decision to leave JP Morgan when I was debating whether I should do that or I should just stay, because it was a really awesome job. Mm-hmm. And I did love it. It was lucrative. And at the time when I was debating, one thing that I came across was a video by Jeff Bezos, and the way that he thinks about things when he's about to make a big decision. And he used this model called regret minimization model. And what he does is, when there's a hard decision to make, a big decision, he imagines himself when he's 60 or 70 and looking back to this moment. And he asks, okay, what is the choice that's going to help me have the least amount of regret when I'm looking back at this moment as a 60 or 70 year old guy? And whenever I ask that question, the answer becomes very clear. And so I tried that myself, and it was very clear. It was to jump at this opportunity to be able to work with my wonderful sisters and give it a try at this, startup that entrepreneurship that we always just talked about but never did. And I knew that I would regret it a lot if I didn't give it a try. So that was really easy. And so no regret there. I would have had a ton of regret that if I actually just stayed in JP Morgan without trying. The other thing is also having a supportive dad. And so I think having a support is really important whenever you're taking on certain risk. My dad, given that he's an entrepreneur himself, was really supportive of our decision. And, when I told him that I was going to do this, he said, hey, there's a Korean proverb that says something like a leaf in a running river doesn't rot, but if it stays in a still water, it's going to start rotting. Meaning, unless you look for change and all constantly reinventing yourself, you're going to start regressing or rotting is the expression. And so I fully support that. And if you struggle and if this doesn't go well, I'm there to support you. And so those two kind of things made it easier for me to make that decision at the time.
Brilliant. This is wonderful. And I love hearing your story. And we wish you the best of luck. Thank you so much, Dawoon. And guys, check it out. It's Coffee Meets Bagel. I love the name, but for me, I'd rather like Coffee Meets Danish because I totally love Danish. But I love the bagel accent. It's perfect. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you very much. And she makes a great point, everyone. Take that chance. It's okay. You'll never regret having tried. Okay, because life is way too short to simply hang out in still water. I love that allegory. I think it's wonderful. And I think you guys are the best for tuning in and listening to all of our podcasts about these great American success stories. And so many of them have the same theme, and that is just take that chance, dive in the water. Doesn't matter how deep or shallow it is, just start swimming and keep on swimming. Have a great day, and I'll see you 3 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, on Fox Business.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.